I strongly believe that mentorship is not related to who you report to or who reports into you, right? I think mentorship flows in all kinds of directions, and it's really hard to force mentorship to happen. What I will say is that a lot of mentorship is about making sure that you're finding someone who wants to listen to you, and then who has the time to listen to you, and also is able to help you with some anecdotes from their career and their work life, or from whatever books they have read or podcasts that they have listened to help you understand your problem better and help you understand the potential nature of the solutions better.
Hey everyone, and welcome to Keep Moving Forward, the podcast from X Team for tech professionals who are passionate about growth, leadership, and innovation. I'm your host, Caleb Brown, and in each episode, we'll dive into candid conversations with the tech industry's brightest minds, seasoned leaders, forward-thinking engineers, and visionary experts. I'm thrilled to welcome Vishnu V. Ram, Vice President of Engineering at Credit Karma, to the show. Vishnu's journey is both inspiring and insightful, spanning early experiences in startups during the dot-com era to leading groundbreaking machine learning innovations at one of the most transformative companies in personal finance. What's remarkable about Vishnu's story is how he blends technical acumen with a focus on mentorship and collaboration. In this episode, he shares how his leadership style has evolved through diverse roles, the lessons he's learned from handling failure, and the importance of fostering continuous learning in teams. Vishnu also provides a behind-the-scenes look at innovations at Credit Karma, including adopting TensorFlow for deep learning and building structured data sets that have driven meaningful business outcomes. Whether you're interested in data science, leadership evolution, or creating a culture of collaboration, this conversation offers valuable takeaways. Ready to dive in? Vishnu, thank you so much for joining.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, Caleb, for having me here.
You do have quite an impressive background. So I thought we could just kind of jump in with having you sort of walk through your career journey that's starting from your early days as a software developer to your current role at Credit Karma.
I started as an engineer at a startup sometime during the dot-com boom time. I was not working on any dot-com company, but I was working in a very small startup, which meant that I was forced to learn a lot of things very quickly. And going through the hype of the dot-com and then the crash that came along with it meant that there was a lot of compressed learning that I feel like a lot of people don't get the privilege of getting. This was in the US. I was in Nashville, Tennessee during the time frame. And then I went back to India and started working at SIFI, which is an internet service provider in India. I was building a network management system, and my CTO at SIFI gave me the responsibility to build out a network management system and build a team around building a network management system. So I did that for a few years, and that's when I got into the habit of focusing on learning, focusing on taking my team along while I'm learning and also learning from them. And one of the things that my CTO there told me that still sticks to me is that if you're able to sit next to the customer and see how they do things, you're going to learn a lot. So when we were building the network management product, we were able to sit right in the network operations center and look at some of the systems and networks, network people use the product. And that probably gave me more insight in how to build a great product and how to listen to your customers and the importance of listening to your customers very early on in my career. After that, I spent more than 10 years doing early stage startups in India. So this is like more CTO roles at early stage startups. A couple of those startups are, one is a listed unicorn and the other is an unlisted unicorn still operating in private mode. Then I decided to come to the US. That's why I had an opportunity to join Credit Karma. I joined Credit Karma late in 2014. I've been with Credit Karma almost 10 years now. And while I had a lot of opportunity working with small teams, working on a lot of greenfield projects when I was at SIFI and when I was at my startups, I think at Credit Karma, I had an opportunity to work at a company which was already scaling, but there was still a lot to do. And where you have opportunity, when I was at the startups and when I was at SIFI, I didn't really have a lot of peers that I was working with closely. At Credit Karma, I had a lot of opportunity to learn from my peers who have been in the Valley for a long time, who had to face a lot of other situations that I had not had the privilege to learn from or to deal with. And so I would say it's been an awesome time learning everything that I have learned here at Credit Karma so far and continuing to learn.
Excellent. Very cool. Yeah. Well, you mentioned a lot of really interesting things. For one, I'm jealous that you got to experience the dot-com era. Obviously, the bust part, not so much, but it is such an exciting, interesting time for products and consumer products. But you also mentioned something that I think is really important that I think even in 2024, some folks miss, which is that, you know, it's so important to talk to your customers, to see how your customers use your product. And so I wanted to highlight that takeaway because I think it's a really important one. And the last question, you touched on that you have been at Credit Karma for nearly a decade now. Just always curious to kind of see what has kept you engaged and sort of excited, you know, about that work for so long.
Yeah, I think during the initial parts of your career, you're just kind of going with the flow. You probably have a few opportunities and you take those opportunities and see where those opportunities take you. It's easy to look back and think that you made great decisions, but then we all need to recognize that a lot of times it's not so much your decision-making capability that landed you in these great situations. It's more, I would say, just serendipity and luck. That's definitely a recognition that I had very early on that you're going to make decisions and those decisions are going to sometimes land you in good situations, sometimes land you in bad situations. But more importantly, it can land you in bad situations that you feel are good in the short term and good situations that are actually bad. So I think that recognition and like knowing and having the humility to just talk to others around you who are not in the journey with you and who can help you make some of those decisions. I think I've always wanted to have a long stint at an organization. I remember one of the co-founders at the gaming startup. I left them after 3.5-4 years. I remember him 2 years or something after I left the company. He gave a presentation to an educational institution. I think he was one thing that he mentioned as a great regret out there was that I did not stay longer with them. And then I realized that it's great to hear that as an individual, that your contributions were valuable for a particular organization's success and growth. But it's much better to hear that while you continue to be in the organization and continue to drive a lot of success there. So I think there is also, you also get a lot of learning when you go through situations where you feel you are stuck and you are able to just persist through the period of being stuck and then you figure out a way out of it. All of that has been there for me here at Credit Karma, right? And I feel like all of this, it comes from your leadership team and the people around you and your team, what kind of support you get from them that allows you to work through some of these issues with some amount of patience and persistence and humility, right? It's always, we always feel that we deserve more. We always feel that we are like the best in the world at certain things that we do. But having a little bit of humility allows you to also learn how you can get better. And I think a lot of that comes when you're able to stick to the tough situations.
Absolutely. Very well said. We've already touched on, you know, the fact that you've worked in a ton of different kind of organizations and different, you know, startups and things like that. So I am curious sort of how your leadership style has evolved as you've kind of moved through those, you know, startup environments and then kind of larger organizations like Credit Karma.
It's very interesting, some of the growth aspects there, right? And again, I'll go back to saying that you learn a lot along the way in terms of how you should grow and how you could have grown and how you could have done a better job. I think probably the first few stints that I've had, I've just had the privilege of having really good education. So which means that the pedigree of your education means that automatically the people around you have respect for you and respect for the potential that you bring along with that. And that can take you some distance. And then you have to put in the hard work and you have to convert that potential into some kind of impact for the team, impact for the project that you're working on, impact for the business. And so what that means is that I had the luck to have had the opportunity to study in really good institutions. And then that, along with that came a little bit of initial respect. And then along with that also came confidence, right? So I didn't have enough knowledge in leading teams. I didn't have enough knowledge in helping team members go through problems and deal with challenging situations. But I had their support and I had their respect and I had their trust. And once I knew that I had their respect and I had their trust, that just gives me more confidence. And I've always been someone who's enjoyed working very closely with my team members, and which meant that they were willing to share in all honesty what they were facing and how they were facing those solutions. And then I was able to just like work with them in the trenches through some of these problems, right? So I think those were early learnings. Only later on, I also understood the power of coaching, where, of course, there is a lot you can do by just like working very closely and solving problems together. But when you get into coaching, you get into a coaching mindset, you're also setting up your team members to find ways to solve their own problems by themselves. So in which case you are trying to like work with them to ask the right questions so that they're able to find the answers. And they're able to find the answers which maybe you don't believe in, but it's still their answers for their problems, that then you are helping them craft and you're helping them provide the support so that they can go along with those answers. And they're going to find very different solutions than you would have found working closely with them. And that means you are helping them grow, and you're helping them grow for the future in a way that you would have never done if you just like sit with them and solve their problems together with them. So I would say that was a very big unlock. And then the next unlock is, now that I have learned to be a good coach, can I help my directs and can I help other directors and others, senior directors, also learn how to coach well and figure out like what are the right situations where you have time to coach through a situation, or when do you decide like, hey, you need to go and solve together or solve on your own and then help that other person learn because they just don't have enough time to pick up some hard skill.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just curious the strategies, because you've been in the game now for a while. I'm curious the strategies you found for kind of effective communication of those complex data science concepts for some non-technical stakeholders.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a very hard problem. And you do not want to take some complex data science concept and go into a large gathering and try to explain an algorithm, right? So that's definitely a big no-no. In general, like if you're looking at your stakeholders, want to understand how are things set up for success? And when things fail, how are you set up to handle it? And how often do things fail? And how do they fail? They want a better understanding of that. Sometimes you will work with stakeholders who do not have an understanding that this whole process is more driven by data. There is some probabilistic nature to it, and it's not all deterministic, and you can't eliminate the probabilistic part of it. So I think the first step is to like help them understand that a lot of this process is like driven by data. And if you feed bad data, or even if you have the best data possible, you might still be missing something else which doesn't allow you to capture reality. And you have to be able to help them understand that it is probabilistic, but there are ways in which you can manage the uncertainty. You don't have to go into telling them how you're doing it, but you have to tell them that, give them enough information so that they are empowered to understand that and help you understand like, what is this use case about? Can it deal with like a 5% uncertainty, or can it not deal with it? If it cannot deal with it, then if you need a highly deterministic system, you probably are going to find it more challenging. I think you have to work with your stakeholders to understand the nature of the use case, because more often than not, you do not have that knowledge and you might think that you are still delivering a highly more valuable system, but your stakeholders might not look at it that way. Your partners, external partners might not look at it that way. Definitely the regulators might not look at it that way. You also have to know when you want to step back and say, hey, we're not going to apply data science here for these reasons.
That's very helpful. And, you know, earlier we kind of touched a little bit on mentorship, I believe. And so I was just kind of curious to expand on that, to drill into that a little bit, and what role mentorship plays in your overall leadership approach and kind of how you actually implement that within your teams.
I strongly believe that mentorship is not related to who you report to or who reports into you, right? I think mentorship flows in all kinds of directions, and it's really hard to force mentorship to happen. What I will say is that a lot of mentorship is about making sure that you're finding someone who wants to listen to you, and then who has the time to listen to you, and also is able to help you with some anecdotes from their career and their work life, or from whatever books they have read or podcasts that they have listened to help you understand your problem better and help you understand the potential nature of the solutions better. It's not about getting the answers immediately. I think it's more about having an opportunity to just like discuss it out aloud and having someone who's willing to listen, but also willing to challenge you. And can you then, if they challenge, be willing to listen to their challenges and then give honor to the challenge? Do you respect the person enough to listen to their challenges? I think that those are the questions you need to ask before you get into like a mentor-mentee kind of a relationship. And I've definitely found people who I've managed who have been my mentors in certain areas. And I have a lot of respect for them in terms of how they do their jobs. Like I mentioned, like my first half of my career was in startups, so which meant that I operate in a certain way, which meant that I didn't learn the ropes of growing as an engineering manager within an organization like ours, where we are like 1,800 people now. And like I didn't figure out how to get to become a manager in an organization like ours. So which meant that someone who has learned how to do that and learned how to deal with all the challenges of being manager in a complex organization like ours has more skills than me. So then I need to first understand that they are a lot better at certain areas than I am. So, and then if they are challenging me in a certain area, then am I willing to listen to them? Am I putting myself in a place where I know that, okay, if they challenge me, then it's an opportunity for me to learn from them rather than looking at it as, hey, I am the VP, you're not the VP, why should I listen to you, right? So I think it's finding the right people and also understanding that like a lot of this can, there are things that will, you want to find, have long-term mentors that you can always go to and you can always, that's like, I don't want to, it's too crude a term, but just to land the point, there is comfort food and then there is good food for you to eat. So I think your long-term mentors are maybe your comfort food. And then you are going back to them again and again. There are so many other ways in which you can like get into this kind of a mentorship mode, whether you are in the position to mentor someone who might be managing you or might be multiple levels above you, or sometimes they are in a position to be able to do that for you.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. So as you can see, you know, we do kind of focus a lot on, you know, the soft skills, of course, in the sort of, you know, the hiring and working together, collaboration aspects. But, you know, we do touch on the engineering side of it. And wanted to know if you could share an example of a kind of a significant improvement or even innovation that you and your team have made on the Credit Karma's machine learning infrastructure.
Yeah, I would say there are a lot of improvements and innovations that we did as part of your machine learning infrastructure. A lot of them are, I would say, very obvious. I would say one of the early bets that we took, 2017 timeframe, 2018 timeframe, was just going with TensorFlow. So TensorFlow was open sourced by Google at that point of time. TensorFlow was in its early days where they were doing dev summits and they were like 0.3 or something. But Google had published this paper on TensorFlow and they had a lot more that was happening behind the scenes, and they only open sourced some parts of it. And we took that and then we said, like, this is the way that we are going to introduce deep learning into Credit Karma. And then the way we went about it was we were able to build a team which built a quick POC, and it included both machine learning engineers and data scientists working hand in hand to understand how we wanted to build that. I would say that was a big change for us, moving from traditional machine learning to deep learning models. But we all understood that we had a lot of data and we wanted to be able to use all of the data to be able to drive our use cases forward. And the investment that we made at that point of time of using TensorFlow and building deep learning models on top of TensorFlow and other relevant Google GCP products like BigQuery and Dataflow, that was a big deal for us when we did that. And it continues to pay a lot of dividends for us. And I think we continue to find wins on top of that initial investment that we made. But the second important thing that we did was to be able to take all our data in our data lake and construct structured data sets, which allowed our data science team to be able to easily explore and easily use these structured, relatively clean data sets to go and build their models on top of it, train their models on top of it. That, I would say, was that combined with our initial investment in TensorFlow, that is what has been paying a lot of dividends for us.
Interesting. Cool. So just curious, as we move along here, what soft skills do you think are probably the most crucial for folks like data scientists and engineers to develop in today's, tech landscape? Because as we've discussed, that landscape is kind of constantly evolving.
I would say one of the important things that I've had to learn by making mistakes that you probably want to do is, like, how good a job do you do of taking others around you along for the journey? And you're not going to be able to take them along for every part of your journey, but are you willing to step back and understand, like, hey, who are you leaving behind? And can you help them catch up with you? This is a very important soft skill. Because there's a good chance that you're actually going in the wrong direction. And the only way you're going to find that out is if you're willing to step back and wait and talk to the person who you're leaving behind. And that might even change the direction or in a very positive way in terms of how you're traveling. This is more important when we also want to be inclusive of people who are going to get impacted by the work that you're doing. More often than not, you're going to learn the most. So if you're building something that, say, a marketing team wants to use, and if you're not talking to someone on the marketing team who's going to use what you're building, they might not use it at all. And then all the work that you put down is, like, then never going to be put to use, right? It might be the best thing ever, but they're not yet using it. And then when they don't use it, then you're not getting value from it. Because you've just built it in a way where they don't understand how to use it. It's not so much because they don't like you. It's just like they don't know how to use it. And you've not built it in a way where they know how to use it. So it's very easy for us to think that it works on my laptop or it works on this data set. But you also need to know that the whole thing works because you have other teams who are part of the solution here and they're using the technologies that you're developing. They're using the models that you're developing. How can they use it? How can they play a role in being a part of that? To really solve our member issues, right, and our business issues. So they are an important part of the solution that you need to recognize, and you need to be able to know how to take them along for the journey. That doesn't mean that they need to understand all the linear algebra and GPUs and whatever else that you're doing to have success, but you need to be able to help them understand the impact. You need to be able to help them understand how they're going to use the solution.
Yeah, said. So obviously every company, every organization has kind of a slightly different culture and a way of doing things. Interested how you foster kind of a culture of continuous learning, which is probably important for this this world, professional development within your teams, just constantly being aware of what's new. Is there anything you do to kind of influence that culture within your team?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I feel like I've done well over the last few years, especially after I learned how to do it well, is to explicitly name your partner teams and explicitly name the people on your partner teams that I'm going to work with closely, that are one of my directs is going to work with closely. And when you go through that process of explicitly naming the people that you're going to partner with, that you're going to work with very closely, then you have a list in front of you, then that list is going to then change over a period of time. Now, based on how the project is going or based on how your role or how the organization is shaping up. So then when you go back and look at that list, you know that, oh, I actually missed someone on this list. Then that's an opportunity for you to add them back in, right? And or add them in for the first time around. So I think that helps you stay grounded on who you're working with as a team to build things together and who you're learning from and who you're going to allow to influence how you're doing things. So that I think that explicit naming of teams and individuals that you're going to partner with rather than just like go with the flow is a very powerful mechanism to use. And also making, let's say you're working with a lot of different teams, also recognizing that you're not going to be able to partner with all of them. Right. So then sometimes you have to then go and say that, like, hey, you're going to partner very closely with 3 out of the 10 people that you put on the list. If you have 10 people on the list, then you're not going to be able to partner with them well. You can have like loose connections, but you cannot have like really the tight connection there. That is also a recognition, right? Then you're going to be able to say that, like, hey, these are people that I'm not working with very closely, who also somehow my organization needs to work with very closely. Then you're also calling out very clearly who is not getting your love and affection and care, right? So then you figure out like how to find other ways to mitigate that part.
Totally, totally. And so another one that I feel like when I speak with folks is there's just a huge spectrum in how people handle it. So I'm interested in how you approach giving and even receiving feedback in your role as a leader.
Yeah, I think you have to try to do it a lot all the time, right? And that's the important part here. Because if you do it all the time, then people know, and like you have to ask people, right? And you have to like not worry about, if you get into the habit of asking people, it also, you're also telling yourself that now is the time to listen. If you don't ask people and then they give it on their own because you've done something or they've done something or they don't like something that you've done, then you might not be in a good position to receive it. So if you start by asking, and if you ask often, everyone knows that you're looking for feedback. And you are also telling yourself that you ask for feedback because you want to become better. So I think the asking often is a very easy habit to cultivate. You don't have, I mean, like you have 30 minutes with someone, you don't have a lot of topics, ask for feedback. You go through a hard project, you miss a delivery, you screw up something, ask for feedback. Take any and every opportunity that comes along your way to just ask for feedback. Then you're telling yourself that, like, hey, this is someone who's, you are asking for feedback, you're taking the action, and then they're giving you feedback. And sometimes they might not, most times they're not going to give you feedback that you like, but you're asking for feedback, not so much so that you like the feedback that you're getting. It's to act on it and learn from it and figure out like what to do with it.
Yeah. One question that I really wanted to ask you in particular, because other guests have not necessarily been in the position, I was very interested in how Credit Karma's acquisition by Intuit kind of impacted your role or really just the overall engineering culture.
Yeah, this is like now year 4 of our acquisition. And what Intuit and Credit Karma leadership very clearly understood from very early on was that, like, Credit Karma was a mature engineering organization with a lot of investments in technology and engineering and our organization that's working really well and continues to drive impact for our users, for our mission, for Intuit as well. So once that recognition was there, very clearly it was about identifying the most strategic areas in which Intuit and Credit Karma, specific teams in Intuit and specific teams in Credit Karma, are going to partner together to achieve. So that has been a game changer for us to be able to make sure that the acquisition goes really well. We were very clear very early on, Intuit leadership and Credit Karma leadership, catching up, figuring out like what are the top 3 things or top 5 things that we want to achieve during every financial year. And then identifying the right teams and right leaders from Intuit and Credit Karma to work very well together on. And then the other part of it is also like where as leaders on both sides continue to work together and achieving some early wins, that allows you to go take much bigger swings, go after like much bigger strategic initiatives, which can deliver a lot more for the overall combined organization. And I think for the last year or so, like I've been involved working very closely with Intuit to build on top of GenOS, which is the GenAI initiative that like all of Intuit is adopting. And I lead the GenAI initiative for Criticom. I work very closely with my peers on Intuit. And I've had like 2-3 year long relationship with some of them, which allows me to make sure that I'm building things the right way so that when I build things the right way, then all of Intuit benefits and not just Criticom are benefiting from that.
Very cool. Very cool. Just interested if you could give sort of one piece of advice to aspiring, you know, data science leaders, what would that be after your years of being in the field?
I think data science leaders, I would definitely say you want to be able to understand the failure situations really well, and you want to be able to understand how to protect your team and protect your business from some of these failure situations. The reason I say that is that when you do data science, when you take all the data, you feel that you, and then you tune your model for the data that you have, the data is not complete, like I mentioned earlier as well. So because the data is not complete, you are the missing data or the fact that you have some problems with the data that you're using to build your model might actually like block you from achieving the success you want to have. If you understand some of the failure situations better, and you'll understand the failure situations better if you're talking to other stakeholders who are not data scientists, they have a lot to share about how things can fail, and that will allow you to succeed better, and that will allow you to also like protect your interests, your users' interests, and your business interests better.
Good stuff. Well, thanks so much, Vishnu. I really appreciate this. This is a great chat. I feel like I learned a lot, to be honest with you. This is really nice.
Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for the opportunity.
Absolutely. What an inspiring conversation with Vishnu about blending innovation with leadership that puts people first. I was particularly struck by how Vishnu's approach to leadership has evolved over time, especially his emphasis on mentorship and creating a feedback-rich culture. He reminded us that great leadership isn't just about technical solutions. It's about empowering people to grow, learn, and bring their best selves to the table. His insights into fostering continuous learning and his candid reflections on handling failure were both practical and profound. Vishnu's stories highlighted how collaboration and humility can unlock not just technical success, but true team synergy. Thank you, Vishnu, for sharing your journey from startups to Credit Karma and for the thoughtful lessons on building teams and technologies that make an impact. And thank you to our listeners for being a part of this conversation. It's stories like these that remind us why we keep moving forward. Join us next time for more insightful conversations with tech leaders who inspire us to grow, lead, and innovate. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube Music. And don't forget to share this episode if it resonated with you. Until next time.